You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Clint Lacy. Clint, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Clint, you wrote a wonderful book called Blood in the Ozarks, Union War Crimes Against Southern Sympathizers and Civilians in Occupied Missouri. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, why don't you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Well, I was born and raised in southeast Missouri, originally in the lowlands, about 16 years ago actually now. I moved into Bullinger County, which is in the foothills of the eastern Ozarks here in southeast Missouri. Always had inclinations of leaning toward the south when I first got interested in the Civil War. Never knew exactly why. I thought maybe it was just a product of geographically where I was from, but before my grandmother passed, I asked her about our family history, and she seemed to recall hearing a story of an uncle in Kentucky that went to go fight for the South. And after she passed, I asked a great aunt of mine if she knew anything about that, and turns out that ancestor was actually one of the 10 men captured with Jefferson Davis in Georgia at the end of the war. So that answered a lot of questions for me.
Okay, I read the book, and I read what precipitated the writing of it, but I think it would make sense for you to briefly explain to the listeners, why'd you write the book?
I believe it was around 2005, I gave a Confederate Memorial Day speech at Fort Davidson in Pilot Knob, Missouri. Fort Davidson was actually a Union fort, but there was a huge battle there in 1864 when General Price led his army back into Missouri and tried to take the state back. But at any rate, one of the characters I mentioned in this speech was Reverend Jesse Pratt, and I was trying to tell the attendees, paint a picture for them why these men fought and why these men would risk their lives in such a bloody, bloody charge. Jesse Pratt figured in prominently in this story. He was a reverend, and he was with the 15th Missouri Cavalry CSA. And Jesse, in 1863, December of 1863, he caught a unit of the 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry, which was Union, and it was about 100 members of that group, I believe. He captured them all at Centerville, Missouri in Reynolds County and took them back south into Ripley County on the Arkansas border. Some people say that Colonel Reeves of the 15th Missouri Cavalry was planning on exchanging them for Confederate prisoners. But the story goes that the bulk of the 3rd Missouri State Militia that was stationed in Pilot Knob, once they found out about the capture of their men, they very quickly started a trip for Ripley County to find these men that had been captured. And during this speech, I mentioned what was known as the Wilson Massacre. And basically what it was Major James Wilson, commander of the 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry Union, he found where the men had been taken, which was one of Colonel Reeves' regimental camps. And they were having a Christmas dinner with their families. The prisoners were under guard. Reeves was a preacher, a Baptist preacher. It is said that he gave a fiery sermon to the prisoners as well. But when Major Wilson and the 3rd Missouri State Militia caught up to Reeves and the 15th Missouri Cavalry, Confederate, it was basically a massacre. And the story goes that women, children, the elderly, as well as the soldiers were massacred in this event. And like I said, it was named the Wilson Massacre because that's who commanded it. The casualties were very one-sided. Hardly anybody in the 3rd Missouri was harmed while they were very high for the Confederates. But after I got through giving this speech, the former director of Fort Davidson, a guy by the name of Walt Bush, I asked if there was any questions. And he said, where'd you get your information? I said, well, it was from a genealogy page about the Reverend Jesse Pratt. And he said, well, if they got their information from Jerry Ponder, then it can't be trusted. So I thought, huh, that's kind of odd, you know. Well, shortly after that, I discovered a book that had been released in either 2003 or 2004 by Paulette Giles, a best-selling author, and it was entitled Enemy Women. Now, Enemy Women was what they call historical fiction. It was a fictional story based on historical facts, and at the beginning of every chapter, there was a historical fact. And at the beginning of one of those chapters was the story of the Wilson Massacre. Miss Giles had spent quite a bit of time down in Ripley County and talked to Jerry Ponder, who was a local author who had wrote extensively about these sort of things. And she got a lot of information from her book from Jerry. Well, this book became a bestseller. The Wilson Massacre was no longer just a local legend after that. It became a national news about a war crime that happened in the Civil War in Missouri on Christmas Day, 1863. So there were two gentlemen who didn't like that. One lives in Ripley County, and the other one lives in Kansas now, I believe. Their names were Ray Burson and Kirby Ross. And as I was digging in to why they might be biased or why they might not accept these facts, I found out that both these men have ties to the Wilson Massacre, sort of. In the case of Ross, he had several ancestors in the 3rd Missouri State Militia that committed the massacre. And as to Mr. Burson, this was a man that was raised in New Jersey and Aruba, but married a woman who was a descendant of one of the 14 Union families in Ripley County. There were only 14 Union families in Ripley County during the war. So both these men have reason to be biased, and they're really just trying to cover their tracks for their ancestors or relatives.
You mentioned a fella that you actually dedicated the book to, and this is Jerry Ponder. And that's
yes.
Who the author got most of those facts from. He passed on, I guess, about 10 or so years ago, right?
Yes, that's correct. And as this controversy heated up, you know, I was going to Civil War message boards on the internet and stuff and trying to find information early on in my quest to find the truth. And I noticed men like Burson and Ross, they were very, very hostile to anybody who thought this might have happened and tried to ridicule them the best they can. I'd actually got a hold of one of Jerry Ponder's friends and said, hey, do you know where he got his information? He said he found some documents. There used to be two libraries in Donovan, Missouri, a county library and a city library, and they were consolidated in the early 1990s, and Jerry saw them throwing a lot of books and papers out into the dumpster, and he thought, hey, this might be something valuable here. And as fate would have it, he found two documents that were in a discarded pile that talked about the Wilson Massacre, and that civilians were killed there. So I got the number from Jerry. His friend was kind of reluctant to give it to me because he said, you know, he's in bad health. He has cancer. And, of course, when these men would demand if I'd seen the documents through our exchanges, I'd say, well, I heard Jerry was in bad health. And, you know, I would get responses like, oh, he's been playing this cancer bit for years. So I really called him out of necessity. I didn't want to bother the man. But he said, yeah, I'll send you these two documents. And he did. And I've got them. One of them has Donovan Public Library stamped right on the top of the paper. In fact, he did die shortly after I talked to him. I'm thinking maybe a couple of months after I talked to him. He had cancer, and he died of a heart-related issue, actually. But Jerry was a good man from everything I could find. He was a veteran. He was in military intelligence when he was in the Army. He had his own publishing company, and he wrote The History of the 15th Missouri Cavalry CSA. And The History of Ripley County, Missouri, both of these books contain vital information about the Civil War in our area.
You refer to it as a Civil War, and I know that's the conventional way to regard this event as, but it wasn't a Civil War, right?
No, sir, it was not a Civil War at all. The only reason I use the term Civil War, I don't really like it myself, but that is what the majority of people use to understand this. That's what they've been taught. It would really be a war of northern aggression or an illegal invasion conducted by President Lincoln. A civil war is when two factions are fighting over the same government to take control of it. This was not the case. In this case, the South wanted to protect their constitutional rights and their economy, and they wished to leave peacefully. And President Lincoln wasn't going to allow that. Matter of fact, the article I have that's going into the Barnes Review in the next issue, I talk about this. President Lincoln's cabinet advised him not to try and resupply Fort Sumter in South Carolina because they had an agreement, the South did, with the government that they would not resupply the fort. And when you dig through the facts, you'll find that General Beauregard, that was commander of Charleston, South Carolina, he would allow the Union commander of Fort Sumter, Major Anderson, his men to come into town and shop and get what they need. And in addition to that, the city people would send him groceries. They were not starving. Lincoln sent that resupply ship with two warships to accompany it to bait the South into firing the first shot so he would not look like the aggressor. So, no, it was not a civil war. It was a war that Lincoln wanted because he did not want the South to secede. The main reason for that was it was not slavery. The central government was getting the majority of their tax revenue from the South in the form of import tariffs. And Missouri was a unique situation. Before the war, the majority of Missourians did not want to join the South. They thought that they could remain neutral, but there was an event called the St. Louis Massacre that prompted the Missouri government to secede. So when the government called on troops to protect Missouri, the men joined what was called the Missouri State Guard, which would be equivalent of the Missouri National Guard today. But at any rate, they joined to defend Missouri, not defend slavery. So that's where Missouri was. And in fact, the war in Missouri became very, very brutal and very personal, very harsh. So that's kind of where this book goes.
Okay, let's give the listeners a little idea about the actual massacre, what you uncovered. Because in the book, one of the things I found very interesting was the chapter where you basically pointed out that there's no way that this could be made up. The summary, perhaps not. Why don't you go over this chapter, this summary, perhaps not. This was a long journey to acquire evidence. That's what this book's all about. So why don't you go over
it? Yeah, it took me about 10 years because I kept putting off pitching this book to anybody because I thought, I just know when I do, I'm going to find more information. And that actually happened. So there'll probably be a second edition in the works. But just to let the listeners know, I mentioned Kirby Ross and Ray Burson, the critics of Jerry Ponder, who said that this massacre didn't happen. Basically, what they used to say it didn't happen was a man by the name of Colonel W.H. Ryder, William Harmon Ryder. They say that he was never a soldier. There's no proof that he was a soldier, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So their basis of this never happening revolves solely around Colonel Ryder. And in fact, Jerry Ponder had gotten a headstone provided for Colonel Ryder at his grave in Donovan, Missouri, through the Veterans Administration. The Veterans Administration will provide a headstone for Confederate soldiers. And it takes a lot of proof to get one. And Mr. Burson in particular, he contacted the VA and said this guy wasn't a soldier. And the VA basically told him to shove off. The chapter, perhaps not. Perhaps if the Veterans Administration had not told Ray Burson, they had no reason to doubt the documentation submitted by Jerry Ponder that proved William Harmon Ryder had served as a colonel during the Civil War and was thus eligible for a headstone, we could believe that civilians were not killed and the massacre did not take place on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri. Perhaps if there were not possible bias on the part of Ray Burson and Kirby Ross, we might be more inclined to believe that civilians were not killed and a massacre did not occur on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri. Perhaps if the 12th Missouri State Militia Cavalry, whose members became part of Company K of the 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry, had not massacred Daniel McGee, approximately 30 of his recruits, and 58-year-old citizen Simeon Cato, we could believe that civilians were not killed and a massacre did not happen on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri. Perhaps if there wasn't a copy of Colonel Timothy Reeves' August 27, 1863 dispatch in which he speaks of the Union militia murdering citizens and burning houses, we could believe that civilians were not killed and a massacre did not occur on Christmas Day, 1863 in Ripley County, Missouri.
What's important about this book is the history here, the way that it's interpreted, the way that it's presented.
I'm no lawyer by any means, but that's kind of how I approach the book. You know, what if this is a court case? So you present your evidence and you summarize that evidence to try and prove the truth. So that's what I did.
Why is this book so important today? Because this happened Christmas Day of 1863, and this is obviously 2016. And if we take out our handy calculator and we subtract 1863 from 2016, we come up with 153 years. Over 150 years ago, this happened, this event that you're satisfied happened because of the evidence that you dug up. Of course, there's going to be people, and you proved that it's ridiculous because they're basing it on one person. But there's still going to be people who are going to fight about this event. But why is this over 150-year-old event so important for somebody in today's day and age?
Three reasons, Dave. First and foremost, the honor of a good man, Jerry Ponder, had been maligned and drugged through the mud by these critics. Second, there's an old saying that if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And third, these men who were massacred and their families, these men were standing up for states' rights against a government that overstepped its bounds. What is to say that with the overreach of government today, people that stand up for states' rights in the Constitution won't be murdered today like they were back then?
Absolutely. And I guess that kind of goes into my next question. People have a lot of choices on what books to read, what to buy. Everybody obviously has limited resources. Why should somebody take $17 plus shipping and buy this book?
Because you're going to learn about a unique piece of history that you probably never heard of before. You're going to learn that Union authorities did kill civilians in the Civil War, despite what you've been taught. you're going to learn what lengths they went to make Southerners pay for standing up for their rights. There's a character in this book named Captain Leeper, William Leeper. And when he found out there were black Union soldiers in the area, he sent out a dispatch saying that he wanted to use them to subdue the South's chivalry. He wanted a race war. He wanted to make them pay. And Leeper had also issued orders that anyone who aided or abetted guerrillas, that was the term that they gave any Confederates, whether they were in a regular unit most of the time, or a state guard unit, or an independent union, or a partisan ranger, they would call them guerrillas, because if they were a guerrilla fighter, they could shoot them on sight. They didn't have to take them as prisoners. But anyway, he issued an order saying that he would kill anybody. Didn't matter if they're a family member, if they let them sleep in the barn for the night, if they fed them. And he's talking about citizens, anybody who aided them. There was also a starvation policy. There's a man by the name of Captain Daniel Pitchford Patterson in this book. And through his story, we learn that the Union authorities had a policy of starving the families of Confederate officers in Arkansas. These things happened. You're not going to learn about them by going to Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore, Amazon, and picking up the latest thing by William McPherson, because you're not going to get the truth from him. And while we're on the subject, I want to sincerely thank everyone who has plopped down $17 to buy this book. I know money is hard to come by these days. You know, the feeling's really overwhelming when somebody says, hey, I bought your book. I've been waiting a long time to have the money to buy it. And it's very humbling. And I want to give everyone a sincere thank you, because I do appreciate that.
Clint Lacy, the author of Blood in the Ozarks, Union War Crimes Against Southern Sympathizers and Civilians in Occupied Missouri. Clint, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And it was a great book. I really enjoyed it. And thanks so much again, and looking forward to talking to you real soon.
Well, thank you so much for having me and allowing me to tell this story. Great honor to be on your podcast. And thank you very much for letting me promote this. I appreciate it.